This is the last lecture in block, in this first whole part of the course, the part that is dealing with class structure and class formation. And then we move on to the state ideology and the end of the semester, an intense grappling with the grand epical theory of history. So we are, shall we say, well launched. I think this is also the exact midpoint of the semester, so already halfway done with the whole semester. Time flies. Let me try to finish up the discussion of Offey and Wiesenthal's analysis of the internal dilemmas, organizational dilemmas of working class formation, with their particular focus on unions as one of the most fundamental types of class formations, the associational form within which collective action gets organized by workers. Let me try to summarize some of the key ideas in the rest of that essay, and then turn to the question of class compromise, which I'd like to spend more time on. Okay, so the central idea that animates the Offey-Wiesenthal argument is really a contrast between two principles by which the internal organization of a collective action can be organized, which, following language that is linked to the Habermas tradition of social theory, they describe as monologic and dialogic forms of organization. That's really the organizational contrast that then underlies their story, their account of the differences that capitalists and workers' associations face. Monologic organizations are organizations that have the form of a command and control leadership of the association that speaks to members in various ways, telling them what to do, but in which there is relatively limited forms of reciprocity and dialogue internal to the organization that shapes what the leaders want to do. Monologic and dialogic principles exist really in all organizations, so one shouldn't think of this as simply ideal types. Of course there's back and forth dialogue, even in a command and control top-down bureaucratic organization. And in the most participatory and open and dialogic organization, there still are aspects of the relationship in which the most committed and leadership elements in the organization are engaging in activities which they then justify to people, and the members go along with it. So it's a combination of dialogic and monologic elements. Their first big point is that capitalist associations are primarily monologic because their tasks are relatively simple. The interests are transparent. The main problems they face are technical, how best to pursue these interests. That there are some cases where it's more complicated than that, but as a first approximation, we can say the tasks that the Chamber of Commerce faces, or that employers' associations in more European-style capitalist democracies face. The tasks they face are relatively straightforward, and they can rely heavily on their expert staffs to run the organizations and to essentially give instructions to members. Working class associations, on the other hand, face a much more complicated task. And particularly they face a complicated task because of the difficulty over time in sustaining the willingness to act of workers. And the Offey-Wiesenthal argument is that the willingness to act depends in significant ways upon the presence of real dialogue within associations. Dialogues in which, therefore, which have the effect of helping workers discover what their own identities and interests are, as well as shaping the priorities and strategies of leaders. The key idea then within their dynamic analysis is that in working class associations, there is typically a tension between monologic and dialogic forms, Working class associations need dialogic forms, but leaders are continually pressured to act in monologic ways so that these two organizational principles don't fit comfortably together. And particularly if you think of this dynamically over time, they don't fit comfortably together. And this then is what underwrites their dynamic historical story about what the trajectory of working class associations look like over time. And that's the part of the story, I think, which is in many ways the most interesting, and in which when you look historically at various labor movements, it rings true as having at least some truth. It's tapping some aspects of the contradictory dynamic logic of development of labor movements. So let me just briefly run through that part of their analysis as a way of sort of tying this up. This is in Roman numeral 3 of my notes. This is the analysis of the historical trajectory of working class formation built around this tension between monologic and dialogic forms of leadership and organization. All right, so the way they lay it out, there are five basic stages of organizational history. These stages have the character of generating either organizational cycles or spirals, depending upon what you think happens across these episodes. And we'll discuss that issue at the end. Okay, so stage one, the initial formation of an association for collective action. This is the initial period of class formation. In the initial period of class formation, there is typically a small, relatively well-organized and solidaristic group of militants who are committed to the task of organization building. They want to form collective organizations capable of engaging in struggle in a durable and robust way. That's why they engage in an organizing drive. This story can be told for unions, it can be told for political parties, it can be told for community organizers as well. You have a group of basically unconditional cooperators. Now, even for that group of cadre, that tight group of activists, typically they need at least a tight group, so they're not unilateralists. You know, it's pretty rare that a single individual will go to a factory and say, I want to organize a union. Nobody will take it seriously. When a single individual does it, usually they form a circle of a few people, at least, who constitute this tightly knit group of militants who then set their task.